welcome to Secondhand Film Critics, your favorite source for mildly pretentious, semi-uneducated, and highly unqualified opinions on movies. Specifically today, three movies. I'm Kayla, and I am here with my co-host,
Noah. We're back for another triple feature, our second of the year, I believe. These are harder to kind of get done sometimes because it's a little more preparation, but I feel like it's worth it. And today, it's been a long time coming. He's been on basically every other series that we've had, but not triple feature. So we had to make sure filling out the whole entire bingo card. We have Zach Smith here to share his triple feature. Do you want to introduce yourself to the like two people that maybe haven't heard you on the podcast before?
Yes, this has been my goal all along. Ever since I saw the first triple feature, I was like, I want that. So here we are, finally. No, like Noah said, I'm Zach. I host a podcast called Godfellas about Christian media, I guess, but more so it's about us taking Christian culture down a peg. But I like movies. I love movies. So I love this show. I love Noah and Kayla, and you know, listeners, I love you too. So hey, we're gonna have fun tonight.
Love for everyone.
We were
just on an episode of Godfellas. When this episode comes out, it will have been 6 days ago, about Easy A. So anyone listening to this wants to go check that out, we highly recommend it.
If you don't have a great day, then yeah.
I know. Yeah. Like, imagine two episodes with us in them.
If you need four movies with great soundtracks, we've got you.
True.
That is true. Pocket Full of Sunshine. Mm. A big winner.
We didn't even
movie.
Talk about that song on
we didn't.
Your episode.
That was a
but
real miss.
It's so funny because that song at that time, like, I just feel like that was literally the biggest song in 2000. When did that movie come out?
2010.
2010. Yeah. Because I remember, like, going to my county fair and hearing that song, like, play with one of the rides and then being with all my friends and being like, I got a book of it, it's okay. And like just screaming like she was. And we never talked about it, but I just had to say
that episode, someone said purity culture and then we went for 2 hours. So
yeah.
Yeah, we got a little sidetracked. The train went off the rails a few times.
Yeah.
That's the best podcast, yeah. When the train derails and goes straight into the woods.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Forever.
Before we get too off the tracks here, though, let's answer last week's question of the week, which, Zach, you didn't even put in an answer this time.
I know.
Think about it.
Wow.
Think about it. And at the end.
I have. I didn't want to have to be brought up twice in the same episode.
Oh,
so.
Sure. Okay. Well, you can share it live. With
yes,
all the listeners.
So our question was, if I believe it was, what is your favorite movie you watched this summer, whether it be new or old? Because last episode we talked about our favorite movies we watched this past summer, new
we
or
did.
Old, and we wanted to hear from the audience to see if we could hear their thoughts. And we got some crossovers with our list, but also we got some other ones that were not mentioned in our episode. So if you want to skip this segment, you can go to the timestamp in the show notes. But let's get into it with our first response from Dan on Twitter. He said Marcel the Shell with Shoes On. Mm-hmm. This is one I have been wanting to watch for a while, but like it like just passed me. Like it came to my theater for a bit and then I wasn't able to catch it. But I definitely want to watch it when it comes streaming.
Yeah, my theater, our local Alamo, I just got it, I think, this week. But I'm going out of town tomorrow, so I think it's going to be gone by the time I'm back,
damn.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, I love Marcel. It was great.
Yeah, you have the benefit of living in a
place
in where you can see movies. Unfortunately, when you live in the boonies, we are not granted that pleasure, but I will see it. It's one that I'm excited for.
Yeah.
I am excited to see that one for sure.
Let's see. On Instagram, Bert of VHS Stack said Sleepaway Camp. Have you seen that one, Noah?
I have seen that movie. It's a great movie. You wouldn't like it, probably. But yeah, it's like a B horror movie about... it's been a while since I've seen it. But it's like about like a girl that goes like to the camp and she's like kind of weird, basically. I'm not gonna like give anything away, because if you know, it's so much better if you don't know the twist when you go in. And also then you can like read all of like the think pieces, because there's a lot of think pieces about this movie, because there can be some problematic elements, but now it's kind of gone the other way where it's been like reclaimed. I don't know, it's a really interesting movie. I think this is a great movie. Great choice by VHS Stacks.
Let's see. Our good friend Bryce said new release, Maverick. Of course, we are big fans of Top Gun Maverick. And first time he said Dead Man from 1995. Are you familiar with that one?
Yeah, that's the Johnny Depp movie and the directed by Jim Jarmusch. I like how they describe it on Wikipedia as an acid Western film. It's a very fun description of like just like a genre. Very funny. Yeah, I haven't seen this, but I remember when he logged it on Letterboxd, and I remember reading Bryce's review for it. So that is one that I could definitely see that I could have guessed that, you know, if I dug back in my knowledge.
Sure. Mike said, watching Moonrise Kingdom in theaters made me love it even more, but for a first watch, I'd say Tape 2001.
Wow, that's so funny that it's such a small movie, but this is one I mentioned too on the podcast, probably because it was on Criterion, so he probably watched it on Criterion Channel too. That's probably why we both saw it. But this is a great movie. Zach, have you seen Tape?
No, but it sounds good.
This is your kind of movie. If you didn't like this movie, I'd be very surprised. Oh. It's very, well, it's Richard Linklater, but it's very
sure,
like...
Sure, sure.
I think it was even based on a play. Like, it was adapted from a play. And it's got that, like, all in one night, just, like, conversations in a room vibe with Ethan Hawke and Robert Sean Leonard and Uma Thurman. They're the only three actors in the movie. So it's a great... It's a great watch. It's really short too, so I think you would really like it, actually.
Yeah, that sounds like awesome. Like. I'll add it to the list.
And lastly, Hunter said Bullet Train, which I did mention on mine. Mm-hmm. Zach is also a Bullet Train fan. Two Bullet Train fans here.
Yeah, I had a great time.
I think that was like the last movie I saw in theaters of the summer. Because August was a little dry. Like I think I might have saw Bodies yeah. after that. So
yeah.
But Bullet Train was one of the last like big ones for sure I saw this summer. Zach, can you let us know what your answer is to this question?
I just had to look through my letterbox because I mean it is Top Gun Maverick, but I feel like that's kind of a boring answer.
Yeah.
So there's only one movie that I saw for the first time this summer, and it was High School Musical. Now, I'd never seen High School Musical because when it came out, I was in seventh grade and I like had my hair dyed black and I was in my room like listening to Under Oath and playing my guitar. And I was like, I'm not watching this crap. So I've just never seen it. And my wife one day was like, this would be a fun thing to do. And I was like, yeah, sure, I'm down. And it was so fun. And the songs were catchy and I had a great time. And it's weird because I was sitting there thinking, I feel like if you put a little more money into this, it'd be something that people really remember. But then I was like, wait, it is something people really remember. Like, wow. I think it's a very impressive, smarter than it seems movie.
Very true. Did you watch the third one?
No, I saw the second one and then I kind of lost my taste for it a little bit, but I'll watch the third one.
The third one, eventually. I think you would think is interesting because the third one has a very high budget.
Sure, sure.
So it's definitely
it was
not
in theaters.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I watched it in theaters. I was there. I remember sitting in the theater watching this movie. It is a great theater movie.
Sure.
They need to re-release these in theaters. I think
they would make so much money if they re-released these.
Yeah, like we had all those people showing up for Minions 2. Ugh. I think there could be a similar thing if they re-released these, like a big TikTok trend of people going to see High School Musical.
In suits.
Well, I think especially because like High School Musical dances trend on TikTok still and like...
Yep.
I think Disney needs to talk to us about marketing again.
Come on, you cowards. Stop making these Pinocchio movies and...
Yeah. Put Disney Channel original movies in theaters.
Get a little Eddie's Million Dollar Cook-Off in there.
Great movie.
Yes,
that
absolutely
movie is maybe in my top five. DCOMs.
For DCOMs? Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you were going to say top five all time.
Like, no, wow. Top five DCOMs for sure.
Definitely. Unquestionably.
Perfect. So let's take a quick ad break. And when we come back, we'll talk about three movies that aren't Disney Channel originals, but are still very good.
Back.
It's time for the triple feature. The lights have been set. We are in our seats. The popcorn is in our laps. We're set. We've sat down for the next 7 hours or 6 hours, whatever it would take to watch all three of these movies. So triple feature, what the premise of the show is, if you haven't listened, is we invite a guest on and they pick three movies that can be any movies that they want, whether they are related by theme or just maybe a trilogy, or just three movies that they really like. We've had all different types on this show. This one in particular does have a related theme. Zach, do you want to talk a little bit about just maybe introduce which three movies you picked and maybe why you picked them?
Yeah, so the three movies that I picked all were life-changing for me in some way, and they're all about music. So they are School of Rock, That Thing You Do, and High Fidelity. These are ones that I'll say I had an opinion on when I was younger, and it's been nice to revisit them and have it not be like, oh no, I was wrong the whole time. You know that feeling where a movie you love as a kid, you're like, this was great. Then you rewatch it and you're like, oh, this is not so good. It was nice to return to them with maybe a little more critical lens and see that for me personally, they hold up. And I'm excited to have this conversation because I don't think that these are three in particular that people like hail as all-time greats. Well, maybe School of Rock, but yeah, I'm excited to get into it because I also think that these are all movies about mainly male relationships with music in general. So
yeah, let's get into it then. I think we should just jump right into it with film number one, School of Rock.
Absolutely.
We did cover this movie on the podcast actually last year.
Oh.
With in one of our We've Never Seen. So this is actually my second time watching it. I didn't re-listen to that, but so if I repeat any of my thoughts, then just pretend I didn't.
Yeah, we can't remember stuff we said a year ago.
Well, allegedly, according to Letterboxd, you liked it more this time.
I did like it more this time, quite a bit more.
Yeah.
Let's read a synopsis quick. Do we have any volunteers from the audience who want to read the synopsis I wrote for School of Rock?
I can read this one. I'll read this one. Dewey Finn is on a mission to change the world with the power of rock and roll. Unfortunately, his plans get a bit sidetracked after getting kicked out of his band, leaving him with no job and no musical outlet. In hopes of getting some quick cash, he poses as his friend Ned Schneebly, a highly recommended substitute teacher, and fills a temporary position at Horace Green Prep School. However, what Dewey thinks will just be a pit stop on his way to stardom might be the very thing he is searching for.
That was very good, Noah. That was very good.
Thank you. Thank you. Let's start with you, Zach. So yeah. What is your relationship to this movie and why did you pick it?
This movie is the reason I play music. This movie is the reason I play guitar. When I was a kid, my parents signed me up for guitar lessons and I hated it. I hated going. So I quit. And then this movie came out and my parents, I think they let me watch it with them when I was like 10. So we watched it and I think they thought, well, he'll like seeing the kids, but really I had never heard like rock music like that. Like all I listened to were like movie soundtracks growing up and like whatever was in the car for my parents, which my mom is a big fan of like gospel music and the band Bread from the 70s, which, you know, like, hey, cool. But like I'd never heard like Led Zeppelin or like the Ramones or things like that. So it wasn't so much like, wow, kids are playing guitar and I could do that too. But it was hearing music and having it like click with me. And also, like, I know Jack Black is hilarious in the movie, but seeing someone like so passionate about the music that they enjoyed I hadn't really seen from anyone ever. Like, I'd never seen someone who, like, their eyes are lighting up as they're talking about, you know, Pink Floyd or Sabbath or whatever. And I thought that that was really cool. And also, like, it's stuff that I realize now, but the way the movie was directed, I remember, like, as a kid thinking things like, oh, the camera hasn't cut, because I'd done, like, acting school when I was a little bit younger. So I had a semblance of, oh, they're not doing the back and forth acting like on TV. That camera's still, like, lingering. Or, like, just remembering shots from this movie, which is crazy, because if you look at the history, it was just a studio comedy. Like, if you've read the script, it's kind of like not that great, but then they got Rick Linklater to direct it, and I mean, the rest is history. Like, it's really I think that it's a well-made movie about the passion behind rock music that just happens to have, you know, Jack Black with a band of kids behind him.
Yeah, for sure. I think this movie is great because it's doing a lot of things at once. So it is filling the role of, like, the family movie. I think this is, like, a great family movie.
Yeah.
It's filling the role of, like, a Jack Black comedy. This is one of his most popular roles. Maybe, like, at this point, his most popular role.
I would say it's his best.
Yeah. And a lot of, yeah, I think this is, like, a huge thing in his career. But it's also, like you said, a Richard Linklater movie that fits in with his catalog. It doesn't feel like just something he did for the paycheck.
Mm-hmm.
You really can feel the intention behind the camera, and it feels like a real movie, not just like a fun little side project he did. It can go alongside Dazed and Confused, the Before trilogy. Like, it fits with everything that he's done previously. So you can watch this movie for many different reasons, like for the craft of it, if you're watching it with your family for the laughs, if you're watching it because you're a fan of Jack Black, if you're watching it because you love music. It's doing so many things at once, and it does all of them really well.
Yeah.
And it's just such a watchable and well-crafted movie, as well as just being super funny.
Mm-hmm.
This is such a funny movie, and I laughed even more watching it this time. Like, the scene you're talking about, I'm assuming, is that, like, the one where he sings them his song,
yeah,
the one that, like, it doesn't cut.
Yeah,
it's a great way, it's a great use of not cutting, but it's also just so funny.
Yeah.
And that song that it was stuck in my head for 2 days, like, just his acapella singing of that, so funny.
Yeah, it's funny because I watched the director's commentary yesterday with Jack Black. And when they talked about that scene, Jack Black didn't want that to be one take because he, like, was self-conscious about the camera being on him for that long of a time without cutting to any reactions.
I feel like that's, like, his genius.
Yeah,
is that
but he
doesn't
just
feel,
like,
self-conscious.
He said multiple times that he, like, didn't want that to be one take. And then he said it kind of grew on him a little bit, but Rick was like, nope, this is what we're doing. Like, it'll be good, I promise. But obviously that scene ended up being super iconic. So he said in the commentary, he was like, yeah, like, I understand what you were doing with it, but I guess it was, like, very difficult for him.
Kayla, what did you think about it this second time that you watched it?
I mean, like, I watched it with the commentary, so I wasn't, and I put subtitles on for the movie, so I wasn't, like, completely watching the movie. They literally talked the whole time. Like, there wasn't a moment where they let the scene just play, like some people do. Like, they literally just talked the whole entire movie. So it was really interesting. But I mean, I liked it pretty much, like, the same. I think I bumped it up, like, half a star just hearing them talk about kind of the stuff that went into it and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I think it still holds up. Like, it wasn't just a one-time thing that I was like, yeah, this is good. Like, it was better on the second watch.
Also, I think Jack Black, people don't talk about, like, just how sweet he is in that movie also. Like, I particularly, the two scenes that jumped out to me are when he's talking to Lawrence about keyboards. And I feel like that scene now, they would have just milked it of when Lawrence is like, no one likes me, I have no friends. And they would have tried to make that, like, a real, like, hard-hitting moment. But I love that the scene is just Jack Black going, like, well, those days are over, buddy, because, like, you're cool now. And, like, the scene with Tamiko where she's like, you know, they're going to laugh at me because I'm fat. And he's like, again, I was like, that scene, I feel like, would just get milked for everything it's like and would be so much more. But I just love that the scene is he's just like, okay, well, you know who else has a weight issue? Me. But I'm sexy and chubby, man. Yeah, like, it's just, it's great. It's
so, those, both of those scenes are so much more real than I think they would be in another kids movie, especially today, because I just think people are looking to make scenes like that and like looking for those moments rather than in this movie, they feel very natural and just part of the story because kids, all kids are going to have insecurities like that. And it's just like, it just feels like I said, a lot more natural. And it also reveals another part of his character to the audience that he's not just like a rock guy. Like he actually does have something deeper going on too. Like he's does actually care for the kids.
Yeah. And I think one of the other things that I like so much is like, even in like the step off scene, which I think, you know, you could, it doesn't really do that much for the movie other than be like a character moment for Zach after his dad's kind of been mean to him. But like just him asking the kids about like, you know, what are you upset about? And so often how I think teachers try to explain away children's feelings. And it's literally Jack Black just being like, so now you're really ticked off and that's okay.
Yeah, that's great, too.
I love the songs in the movie, too. Like the the School of Rock song, I think, is like a bop. And I don't think the No Vacancy song is good, but it's perfect to like describe why the band isn't very good.
Yeah. Are we saying, are you talking about the first song or the song that they win Battle of the Bands?
I would say both. Like the Battle of the Bands song is a little better, but I remember as a kid when I would watch the first song, I was like, well, I don't get it. Why don't people like this? And now I'm like, it's bad.
Because it doesn't have passion. That's why. That's
very early 2000s rock.
Yes.
Which is a move, something that High Fidelity kind of captures too a little bit, even though it took place a little earlier.
Yeah.
It's very that era, like the guys are a little older, kind of like Foo Fighters. It gives me big Foo Fighters in the 2000s vibes.
Yeah.
And that's why this, when they play, the School of Rock plays, it just sticks out so much more because you can feel the passion behind their playing.
Yeah.
As opposed to the other people who are just doing it to win, which is the point. Yeah. And it's like they don't win, but they really win.
And I love at the beginning of the movie when Theo says to him, when they're kicking him out of the band, he goes, it's the 20-minute solos, stage dives. And at the end of the movie, it's like there's 20-minute solos and stage dives. But this time it's like he's doing, he's like cares about the music he's playing. And like he's not just trying to, because I grew up like playing in punk bands and stuff. And the thing is, Dave Grohl, speaking of the Foo Fighters, has a thing about this where like, it's not necessarily about going and playing well, but it's about putting on a show where people go, whoa, like their bass player was doing flips. I really want to go see them again. And then you listen to their band on, you know, the internet and you're like, well, they're not very good, but they're energetic. So it's cool to see in the movie Jack Black going from like, well, I'll just go crazy on stage and, you know, just be extra to at the end where it's like earned and it makes sense. Like it's like, character arcs don't always have to be big and dramatic, but I think that that's just a really well done character beat for him.
No, yeah, I just think it's funny. I mean, I feel like the movie just encapsulates almost like who Jack Black is too.
Yes.
As a person, because he feels like someone that is very like genuine. And it's cool to see him in a role that feels like, I know he loves all this rock music and stuff.
Yeah.
But it's cool because I was in the commentary and then I was reading about some of the kids and how they all like were musicians or whatever. But I liked how Linklater talked about them. He was like, they're not just like kids, like they're working professionals, even though they are kids. Like they go to auditions. They all came and auditioned like. And so it's cool that, like, it feels like the team they had was a very authentic, wanted to be a part of it, loved the music anyway. And I think that really shows in the movie, like, why it feels so good when you watch it and why it feels so, like, wow, this music is perfect for this. Or, like, that kid is perfect for this. Wow, Jack Black, like, is this his best role? Like, you're thinking all those things because they're true because it's authentic. And I think that's what really sells this movie and what's made it last so long. Because this concept, you see it in DCOMs all the time. You see it in other kids' movies on Netflix. Like, this isn't really a new idea, I guess, of, like, taking a ragtag group of kids and making them great by the end and making them into something, whether that's sports related or something else.
It's the opposite, taking a group of great kids and making them ragtag.
Yeah, sure, sure.
Yeah, true.
But it does, like, I just think here, with everything behind it and everyone that was a part of it, it just makes it so much better, and that's why it has had the impact that it has.
Yeah. Well, I even wondered, like, I was thinking about it on this rewatch going in. I said, do you need the liar revealed story? Like, could it have just been like, he's the kooky new music teacher at, like, their school who's playing rock and they don't like it? And I was like, no, I don't think it would work, because, like, just that little tension of, like, and I'm not crazy about the liar revealed storyline usually, but just that little, like, tension between him and Joan Cusack about, like, is she going to find out? Is this all going to blow up? And then when it does, it's like,
yeah.
Yeah. So it adds, like, a nice tension that you wouldn't expect from a movie like that.
You need it to, like you said, create the tension, because if not, it would just be more of a hangout movie.
Right.
Which is fine, but I think that is, it wouldn't have enough to keep it engaging for that long. Like,
absolutely.
If it was just like this cool music teacher, because I think what makes it interesting is you see before he even gets to the school, like, they establish his motivations and who he is and, like, why he wants to be in a rock band. And, like, they do a really good job of setting all that up. So I think without that, in that baseline you get of his character, it would be very one-dimensional.
Yes.
Of just like, let's see these kids go and turn into a cool rock band. Like, you need his character as well.
Yeah.
To give it that other dimension and to grow, like you said, like, his arc adds a lot to the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's kind of like going through a simultaneous arc a little bit along with the kids, and it's like, it adds a lot for me. So I think this is a great pick, and it shows definitely a really good, like, all these three movies show different sides of, like, why people love music, or just music in general. And this is just a great side of just, like, the pure passion to play just for the sake of music and just, like, create good art, even kids and just, like, regular people loving music and talking about music and making music. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's great.
Absolutely.
Which is a little, it's interesting when we compare it to our next movie, which is That Thing You Do, which has elements of that, but also you see other reasons why people are playing music, and, like, it just gets a little hairier, you know, and you see some of the more dark aspects of, you know, it's not always just like pure passion, like in School of Rock.
Right. Right.
Zach, do you want to read the synopsis we have here for That Thing You Do?
I would love to. Guy Patterson is an aspiring drummer working at his dad's appliance store in Erie, Pennsylvania. He spends his days selling, sweeping, dusting, and stacking. But at night, he practices drums in the basement, waiting for the day his luck will change. Things start to turn around when his two friends, Jimmy and Lenny, ask him to fill in for their drummer at the local talent show, where they'll be performing Jimmy's new song, That Thing You Do. Is this the big break Guy has been looking for? Or is he doomed to live a quiet suburban life forever?
I like how his name is just Guy, too. Like, it's just, it's very 1964, like, dreamy-eyed boy looking for a change from a small town.
Absolutely.
Guy Patterson.
Guy Patterson of Patterson's Appliance. Yeah.
Yeah. Why'd you pick this movie? What is your connection to this?
So this one is like a two-tier story, but this one was seventh grade, me starting to play in bands. Cause for me, it was always like, I liked playing guitar. I liked writing music. I liked rocking out. But that was when I was starting to notice that there were other kids who were like, and if we ride this all the way, we could be famous, you know, or like, we're going to be millionaires and stuff like that, which never really like clicked with me. Like, I didn't realize until high school that, like, when I guess it's not so much like this now, but like guys who go on tour with bands, like that was their job. I was like, when do they like go home and, you know, work? Where do they work? How do they get that time off? Because I want to do that. And I think that's more the case now. But, you know, back then I was like, I wonder what Fallout Boy does when they're not on tour. Do they work at like Panera? So
that's funny. Yeah. Right.
And so this one, just always being a band guy, it's cool to see a movie get that right, even though it's based in the 60s. But the other part is my best friend, Mitch Dupree. He's been on this show. He's on Godfellas all the time. This is also one of his favorite movies. And when we met each other, we were just kind of like going back and forth about like, what do you like? And this movie came up and we just started quoting it at each other all the time. And still, like, we watch this movie together once a year. And we, again, we quote it at each other out of context, and it's always a nice time.
I love that. That's great.
There's a moment we became, there's a scene, spoilers in the movie.
Oh, but not spoilers for that thing you do that came out in 1996.
There's a scene where Guy Patterson is wearing sunglasses and Jimmy has just been dumped by his girlfriend. And he turns around and he says to Guy Patterson, take those stupid sunglasses off. So, and then Guy says, why couldn't you have dumped her in Pittsburgh? Because he screams earlier, I should have dumped you in Pittsburgh. So my friend Mitch is coming down the stairs one day when we were like on tour for a production, and he's wearing sunglasses. And I just go, take those stupid sunglasses off. And I didn't know him super well then, but I just realized, oh, if he doesn't pick up the quote, I just said something terrible. And he stopped for like a little too long, but then he took off his sunglasses and did the, why couldn't you have dumped her? I was like, yes! Yes!
That's awesome. That's great. The beginning of a beautiful friendship, just like in Casablanca.
Absolutely.
It's great.
That's so funny. Yeah.
That is really funny. I'd never seen this movie until today. Mm-hmm. So it's like we all have kind of, because Kayla, you watched it a long time ago, right?
Yeah. It's been a while since I've seen it. I can't remember when I watched it exactly last. It would have been like maybe not quite 10 years ago, but around that, I would guess, like when I was younger. And I remembered parts of it for sure. Like I remembered the basic plot line. I remembered some of the scenes, some of the more iconic scenes of it. I don't think it really had left much of like a lasting impression on me. Like I know that I love the radio sequence when they find out they're on the radio. Mm-hmm. I think that's a great scene. And I think that's maybe the one thing that like stuck with me. But overall, I wouldn't say like it's one that necessarily like impacted me, but it isn't one that I've been like, oh, that stupid movie that I watched for, like, it's one that I remember enjoying when I had watched it previously. Mm-hmm. So I watched it again today, and it was pretty much how I remembered. Like, it's not my favorite, but it's one that, like, I didn't disenjoy watching it, I guess. Like, it's one that I think you can have a good time while watching.
Yeah, it's like kind of like School of Rock. Maybe not as successful, in my opinion, but it is trying to do a lot of things, like, I mean, this is Tom Hanks' like directorial debut. Like you can really tell he was trying to like, he had a lot of things in his head and there was like, let's just do everything. And you can really feel that. Like there's a lot of swings that this movie takes. And I like how ambitious it is for sure, because it is trying to do like the rom-com aspect, but it is also trying to be about just the music maybe, and also why people play music and the different types of people that are in bands. And it's also trying to be a snapshot of pop music in the early 60s using this fictional band that he has to create all this lore for, and there's lore at the end in the fake end credits, like what happened after their lives. So it is like a really surprisingly ambitious movie for just like, oh, this is just a fun movie about a one-hit wonder band that did like a fake one-hit wonder band. Like there is a lot of different things that they try to put in this movie. Mm-hmm. And even though if they don't all work for me, I do appreciate the ambition. And I would actually like to see I'd probably watch the director's cut one day, because I think that'd be interesting.
It gives you more background into the band. I just don't think the movie's better. So if you haven't seen it, I do think the theatrical cut is better, but the directorials has like cool stuff in it too. I think for me, a lot of the moments that are most meaningful now, because again, there's all the quotes, there's all the lines that, like, I love saying, presidential flashcards, all, like, all these things that I love so much. But on this rewatch, my favorite things were the scenes of everybody looking at each other while music was playing. Like, the first scene when Guy plays That Thing You Do Too Fast, and, like, you could, and you see all over, like, Lenny's face, he's loving it. Guy is, like, in the basement in his mind. Jimmy is, like, furious, and the bass player is struggling to keep. I was like, it's so, like, that scene I think is just so good, and it's so much fun. And I love that you have the old drummer in the back, like, it's too fast, oh come on, like, I love that. And then I love at the end, I love when they're doing the dance song, and it's like, literally that scene doesn't move the plot of the movie, it's just them playing at, like, the festival, and everyone's loving it, and it's just a great moment for the band. But I also love at the end when Guy's playing with his hero, Del Paxton. Like, that scene is just so good. And it's like, yeah, they don't need to say anything. Like, just, I like that the scene is able to speak for itself without, like, dialogue.
Yeah, I think the best part of this movie is the song. Not just because, like, it's a good song. But I think this movie doesn't work if the song doesn't work. And so I think whoever, I don't know who wrote the
Schlesinger
song.
It's a Schlesinger.
Okay, there you go. Yeah. Yeah, I think it does a great job of just sounding like an actual song that a one-hit wonder band would have made.
Yeah.
Because I really enjoy listening to, like, all the random 1960 one-hit wonders. I think that's a really interesting period in music history. And so it does a really good job of, like, sounding like a real song that would have happened with. But the best part for me is in the beginning when they're practicing it in the garage.
Yes.
And it's the slow ballad. And I heard it and I said out loud, I was like, man, this song sucks. Like, I was like, this is awful.
Yeah.
And then he plays it fast and I was like, wow, this is a great song. And I think that's what the movie's trying to do is it's like it's trying to show you that was, like, his inclination, like, he knew that making it faster just would make it sound better. And it does. So I think if that's, like, not, if that doesn't work, and if the song isn't actually catchy,
yeah,
when it's faster, then the whole movie doesn't work. Because you have to believe that could actually be a song that could get them to this place. It makes it more believable rather than if the song is just like, eh, then the whole movie feels a little bit more of a fantasy. But
yeah,
it feels more like it could have actually happened, because it did. Like, stuff like this actually was real, because the music industry was a lot different in those days. So,
yeah. I do love the O'Neaters Wonders gag. It gets
so
me
funny.
Every time.
It's so funny.
The Wonders.
Next. O-N-E. Next. This Wonders with the O-N-E. It doesn't work. From now on, you boys will simply be the Wonders. As in, I wonder what happened to the O'Neaters.
Yes. His character, I feel like Steve Zahn, like, is literally the best character actor. Like,
Steve Zahn is so funny.
He is so underrated, because I feel like everything he's in, he's just so perfect. And, like, I know that he doesn't, like, lead things a lot, but I feel like it doesn't matter, because that kind of role, and it's so funny to me seeing him in this and being like, he was exactly the same in 1996 when he was younger as he is in, like, movies now, where he's still playing that. Although now I think it's more of, like, a dad character, but he still plays that comedic relief, like, funny guy.
He's definitely, I think, the most fun to watch of the four. But one of my favorite stories is the audition for the part of Jimmy was the I Quit scene, where he has to sing I Quit. So the guy who got the role was, like, so nervous that he went outside and, like, chain smoked, like, four packs of cigarettes, came in, did that, and then just walked out of the studio. And Tom Hanks was like, where's he going?
Yeah, I think he is definitely annoying in this movie, and that is probably purposeful. So it's like,
I mean, I know that guy. Like, we all know, we all have met that guy.
Yeah, definitely.
And I think it's you need that for the movie, because you have him in the band for, like, allegedly, like, the art of it, but it really doesn't seem like that. He just seems like a very self-centered douche.
Yeah.
And then I think you have the drummer guy. He's actually in it for the art of it. I think he would be like the Jack Black in School of Rock. But then you have the other two characters who are just in it for fun. And that's also just, a lot of people are in bands just because they want to have a good time.
Yeah.
And I like that, seeing that aspect of it too.
I do love that the bass player doesn't have a name.
I love how the bass player doesn't have a name and that he's also the one that like is obviously like doesn't know how to play the instrument in the beginning. Yeah. Like he's just the friend and they need a bass player and they're like, here, you play the bass. Well, like
it's funny because
it's so true.
In real life, he's the only one who knew how to play like an instrument prior to the movie.
Wow. He's great. He is in the movie All I Want for Christmas.
Yes.
And he's great in that movie.
Mm-hmm.
I can't believe he like isn't in more things because I actually think he's a really good actor.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
He's in First Man.
He is in First Man. I love that movie.
Great movie.
Yeah.
Big First Man guys. We're big First Man fans.
I was just talking about that movie with Caroline because I was like, that's my space movie. Other people are like, Interstellar? No.
Oh, no. Mm.
First Man. That's the one.
Interstellar theme, the soundtrack Interstellar, yes.
The score is real. The First Man score is good too, though.
It is. I have the screenplay at my house. It's good.
Hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
This is now a First Man podcast. Anything else about that thing you do that maybe just like things that you like or like stuck out?
I'm going to say something bizarre.
Go for it. We love that.
But when I was watching like Top Gun Maverick, I was like, when I was watching Top Gun Maverick, I was like, this is good. I don't see what everyone's like that excited about. But then I stopped thinking about like the audience reception. I was like, you know what? I like all these characters. I'm having fun. I'm enjoying myself. It's well paced. I'm having a blast watching this.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, like that's good enough to merit a movie being praised. And then you get the third act, which is, you know, absolutely incredible. And for me, I think a movie like That Thing You Do is very similar in that for me, when I watch it, it's like a nice change of pace. Like I like all the characters. I think it's funny. I feel things. It's not super long. So it's one that, you know, I could watch anytime because it's just like a nice, refreshing, uplifting thing to do. So like maybe it's not like the greatest like music movie of all time, because I think, you know, there's a lot of people who really, you know, enjoy it. So I could see someone maybe going in and being like, it's not that good. But I think if you're able to just like kind of put yourself in the frame of mind to just like enjoy something without too much like, this is revolutionary, then it's just a really solid comedy.
Yeah, it is a very fun and just like chill movie, similar to School of Rock. Like it just like you can chill out with it and enjoy the music and just have a good time with the characters.
Yeah. And like Top Gun Maverick.
And like Top Gun Maverick. And with chill with the music and during the football scene.
Yes.
So do we want to move on to movie number three?
Yes.
Number Trace. Yes, I do. Numero Trace movie. Yeah. Sure. High Fidelity.
That's right.
from 2000, March.
Wow.
This came out 5 months before I was born.
Really?
So it did.
Wow.
March 2000.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. I'll read this quick synopsis here about this movie, and we'll get into it. Rob Gordon can't catch a break. Every relationship he's had since eighth grade has ended in his partner leaving him for another guy, including his most recent girlfriend, Laura. Instead of wallowing in his grief, Rob decides to figure out once and for all why his luck in relationships has been so bad. All while running a local record store, Championship Vinyl.
Mm.
I had to get the vinyl store in there somewhere. It's hard to know where to fit it in the synopsis, but it's got to be in there to make it synopsis. Yeah, High Fidelity. Why did you pick this movie as the final film in your triple feature?
So this is one I saw my senior year of high school.
Ooh, that's an interesting watch, senior year of high school.
It really is. And I was hanging out with these kind of guys, like the record store kind of guys. Mm-hmm. Like the Rob Gordons were dudes who, you know, I was surrounded by. And someone recommended this movie to me under the caveat of like, watch it because this is going to be you in the next few years. And I watched it.
I hope not.
I watched it and I was like, well, to some extent, like the sitting around in the record store and like hanging out and talking about stuff and like making fun top five lists. Yeah. But I remember even then watching the movie being like, oh, Rob Gordon is not like a good dude. And I don't have to be this kind of guy. Mm-hmm. So it's what I'm happy that I saw because, yeah.
Cautionary tale. Yeah.
It is. And I think that's what I like about this movie. I like movies that are cautionary tales. And this one, like, I've seen arguments that the lesson of the movie comes too little too late. And I think I could kind of agree with that. Or some people have said, like, the audience isn't going to get that this movie isn't really suggesting Rob's lifestyle as being something that's appropriate. But for me, I think I get enough out of the movie where it's a nice, you know, I like movies where the characters are unaware that there are consequences for their actions. And I like seeing them realize, oh, I'm the bad guy in my own story. So that's what I like about this movie. But also, I just love the scenes in the record store. I love the aesthetic of the movie. Like, the world feels so lived in. And I really, really enjoy that. And I think one of my favorite, like, meta things is that this is a movie that you would find, like, in a record store and be like, oh, this looks kind of cool. And the staff would all be like, bro, that movie's so good. You got to get it. And it's about them. So, like, it's, I don't know. I really dig this movie. But you two didn't seem to like it very much.
Well, I did not like
it. Based on Letterboxd,
I think the ending makes up for a lot. And I would be interested to watch it again knowing the ending. You said, like, the record store scenes. I love the record store scenes.
Yeah, same.
And I think it might not say... It would be a very different movie, but, like, I would love to see, like, Clerks, but, like, for a record store.
Absolutely.
Like, that's what those scenes gave me the vibe of, and I was like, man, that would be... Because, like, the scenes where, like, they don't let people buy the records because, like, they're not cool, or there's just so many funny little bits, and Jack Black is...
I don't think I'm selling it this week.
It's just such a great role for him, and the three of them are so different, and they complement each other so well that it makes for like a really fun watch. And the Beta Band scene, like, it's just so many funny like little bits, and I really love that stuff. And as far as the relationship stuff goes, like, I think when you first watch it, obviously you don't know what the movie is what the main takeaway is going to be at that point, because if this movie came out now, I would know, oh, obviously they think this guy's like a loser. But in the 2000s, you know, there was a lot less certainty about, you know, which way does the director feel about his main character? Like, does he endorse the main character? Not like I'm saying, like, I need messages to be clear, but I think it gave me Woody Allen movie vibes. And his movies obviously endorse the main character because they're him and Woody Allen if Woody Allen loves anyone, it's himself. So that's kind of what it gave me the vibe of, but I really did think the ending made up for a lot, and just, it was an interesting, way of showing like a character growing, but it felt very real and not like they were just trying to like make this really dramatic arc where he finally learns how to be a good person and is like, oh man, I've been such a bad boyfriend. Like, he's still like not a perfect person. But like the problems that he is dealing with just feel like real, and especially like the how he gets back into the relationship, and then there's still the issue that he deals with wanting to get with the news magazine. I think it's a magazine, the magazine reporter. That like last half an hour really recontextualized the rest of the movie, just because I was able to see a little bit more of the direction that it was going in. And I saw what the kind of movie it was, rather than like maybe like a Clerks. Like, maybe this is just a movie where they just show people doing stuff, and it's a very, what's the word, detached from the main story. But I really did think that the last half an hour made up for a lot. And so I would like to watch it again, knowing the ending.
But now to like jump to the other side, though, I do at the same time see how some like a young guy could watch this and have a total misreading of it, because it's basically like, hey, you shouldn't be using people as wish fulfillment. Like, one of my favorite scenes in the movie, and it's so like, it's such a nothing scene. This is a thing with me. Like, my favorite scenes in movies are like, Zach, that's not like a scene. That's like a shot. But I love the scene where they're at the bar and they're watching the singer sing. And he's like, gosh, I'd like to date a musician. Like, she could tell me about like her songs or whatever. And like, you're kind of rolling your eyes and you're like, oh, okay, whatever. But then I love later in the movie, there's a scene where Dick starts dating the girl who was in the record shop and they were talking. And there's just like a little shot of him meeting up with her before they're going to go somewhere. And you see that Rob is kind of noticing. And you could tell that like in his heart of hearts, he's like, I wish I could just have that. Like just a real genuine relationship with someone else. And it doesn't have to necessarily be with someone who's like going to fulfill a wish for him. Mm-hmm. Like stuff like that, I think is really cool. But it's maybe too subtle. I don't know. Kayla, I'd love to hear what you think about
this.
Yeah,
I think this just isn't my style of movie. I think I don't usually like this kind of movie in general, like the way that it's structured and the narrator talking to the camera. Like, I just don't think that those elements work for me. I did really like the stuff like set in the record store. For me, that was the most interesting stuff because that is very different from the rest of the style of the movie. And so I think that's why those hit for me a little bit more. And I love Jack Black, so I think that works for me too. I wish the whole thing for me would have, obviously that would completely change the movie, but would have been just about them working at the record store, and you could have the relationships and stuff in it as well. But I think what the storyline I liked the most was like how he became like a record store owner, that like they kind of had these tidbits of like, this was how he appreciated music and chose to like work in music and stuff like that. Like that was interesting to me. And I wish there was maybe a little bit more of that. So there were tidbits of things that I liked. I think overall though, it just isn't my style of movie.
I'm curious what either of you would think about this. I think because the Rob Gordon character is like on paper pretty unlikable, but I think like John Cusack just has this like regular guyness to him where I'm like, I want to keep watching though.
Yeah, I think it's a very good casting choice, in my opinion. Yeah, I think if it was someone that was just like a really like great looking guy that was just like complaining the whole time, I think that would have been a lot more annoying, where like you said, he looks a lot more ordinary in doubt, like someone that you could probably like you could see on the street. I think that definitely helps a lot. It reminded me a lot of Fleabag, because that's also a fourth wall breaking show that is just all about like her deepest like inner thoughts, mostly about like relationships. And even though it does end with him still talking to the fourth wall, it kind of ends feeling like maybe the fourth wall stuff was just like his internal thoughts in this one moment. Like it feels like that was another version of himself that maybe at the end he's kind of able to put to rest a little bit more, and he just kind of closes his eyes and lays on his couch trying to make that mixtape, like he doesn't need that anymore, which is similar to the end of Fleabag, would not just kind of spoil it, but like that's kind of how that movie ends too. And it uses the fourth wall less as just a plot device and more as a character. There's a reason they're breaking the fourth wall right now, rather than like, oh, well, we need them to explain their inner thoughts to the audience. Like it feels like it serves a narrative purpose in that way, which I really did also think that was also a good choice.
Yeah. Well, one of the things I liked about the mixtape thing is, not to get too personal here, but like, that was kind of my move. Like if there was a girl who I was kind of talking to, I'd make her like a mix CD, but it was never like, here's songs I think you're going to like. It's like, here's music that I like. Okay, you have to like this now. And then part of getting older and maturing was like the flip side. Like, why don't you tell me about stuff you like? And there's like even a line in the movie where John Cusack talks about, I forget the line, but he's saying, you know, favorite movies, favorite books, this stuff matters. And it's like, yeah, I think when you're like 19, that's the most important thing. Like, we like all the same stuff. But I think, you know, now, not even just like in romantic relationships, but like in friendships, I want to talk to people who, you know, don't like the movies I like, or people who, you know, like movies that I don't really care for, because like that's, you know, more interesting for me. You know, I don't just want to sit around and agree with people about stuff, and I don't want to sit around and argue. But at the same time, like, I like to have challenging conversations and to grow and to have my tastes, you know, expanded. So I really like that the movie kind of ends with him saying, I need to start doing this more.
Yeah, and he says something about like how he's like trying to think of songs that she would like for that mixtape too, which I think is a bigger deal, because before, when he's talking on the mixtapes, he's just like obsessed with the track listing and the flow, which is also very funny because that's very relatable too.
Well, I'm also, I have rules for like playlists also, so I was
yeah,
like, I get it.
Yeah, and yeah. His rules lined up, the ones I heard. I was like, yeah, that tracks. Yeah. That, those are good rules. Yeah, there's a lot of funny stuff like that in here that I think that I enjoyed that stuff too.
Yeah, we're all big mixtape people, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's a different... The other two movies that you picked are more performance-based, but this is a lot... This is a different side of music, which is the more, like, the way that people use music in their everyday lives and, like, how they consume music and integrate it into their lives. Mm. So I really like that this is the last one, maybe, in the triple feature, too.
Yeah.
Because you even get the opening line where it's, like, people are always worried about kids playing violent video games and watching movies, but they should be worried about listening to all these songs about heartbreak and messed up relationships. Like, that's basically what the songs that were in the first two movies were, like a lot of the rock songs and The Thing You Do. Like,
yeah.
And this is how the music is impacting other people and how they're taking it and using it in their lives. So it's a cool way to see the results of the work.
It is. Well, sorry, one little thing I love when he's reorganizing his records.
Autobiographical.
And he's like, autobiographical.
It's the funniest thing I've ever heard.
I was like, that seems like a fun thing to do, but I just don't have that.
Yeah, I was like, I wonder if I could do that. And then I was like, no.
Too much. Yeah.
Like, it's hard enough for me to sort them as it is, but definitely not autobiographical.
And I also love the line where the other guy came to his house and was like, you shouldn't stack them this way because they can warp. I was like, that's what I was saying.
Yeah, Dick is great. He's so great in that movie.
I've said that to people so many times. I try to be so nice about it. I'll be like, that looks really nice, but unfortunately, your records are gonna warp when they're like that, or when they're at the like thrift store and stuff. I'll be like, oh, these thrift stores warping their records, blah blah blah.
Yep,
I always tilt them back up.
I always try to.
Let's talk. Just wrap this up. So, any final thoughts on this whole triple feature as a whole? I kind of talked about it a little, but you guys have any thoughts?
I think my big takeaway, now that I've had time to think about this, is these three movies are about like how music can be a communal experience. Because I think so often when we think about music, it's like in the car by yourself or at home by yourself, or like, you know, just like sitting at the library with headphones in. But I think this is about like the shared experience of enjoying music together, which, and I think music, it hits different than movies or TV, because, you know, when you watch a movie or TV, that's obviously a person playing a character. And, you know, it's not maybe as relatable as when you listen to a song and they're kind of, there's less between you and the artist. You know, it's someone who's, you know, here's my lyrics, here's my chords. And I know that now there's like a producer and stuff behind that. But I do think that music is one of the more raw forms of expression that we have in art. And it's fun to consume that with people. And I do think it's kind of something, I don't want to say that's going away, but I definitely don't see people getting together to listen to albums as much anymore. And I do miss records coming out. I know that singles are kind of the way of the future, but I don't know. There's just something to me that's so beautiful about like sharing a song with somebody or, you know, playing music with somebody else to get back into, you know, the band stuff. So, I mean, altogether, I just think that these movies are a love letter to the shared experience of music.
Hmm. Yeah. And all the different ways you can share it, too, and experience it. Very, very cool. I agree. Yeah. I don't have anything else. That's a good way to wrap it up. Yeah. Yeah. So with that, I think our question should be, what is your favorite movie about music? So that could be one of these three, obviously, or it could be any other one. So this doesn't mean musical. It can be a musical, but it has to be about music. So like Singing in the Rain isn't really about music. High School Musical is about music. So just
The Sound of Music is about music.
The Sound of Music is about music. Yes. And I think that would be a good choice, actually.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe it wouldn't be my choice, but that is a good movie about music.
West Side Story, not about music.
No.
No.
About romance and, you know,
racism,
gentrification, and dancing in the streets. The three things every movie needs. Zach, do you want to tell the audience where they can find you and your podcast, obviously?
Oh, yeah. You can find us at Godfellas the Pod at Instagram. And then, you know, just go to Apple or Spotify or wherever and type in Godfellas, and there we will be. We just did an episode with Kayla and Noah. And depending on when this is coming out, I think this comes out next week. Yeah.
Tuesday. Yeah.
Well, hey, in 2 days, we have an episode on The Sound of Music coming out. So, you know, if you want to...
More music!
If you want to have a great music week, you know, just listen to all these shows.
That's very iconic.
That's great.
I love that movie.
You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook if you just search Secondhand Film Critics on the socials. That's also where you can reach out with your answers to that question of the week that we mentioned earlier. And we'll read that in our next episode. We were on all podcasting platforms, the one you're listening on right now, as well as others. And if you're listening on one, you can rate us. We would love if you left a nice 5-star rating and review. That would be great. Just, you know, just nice to see. It just boosts the spirits.
Cool. So our next episode will be talking about the Lost Weekend Film Festival, which we will be attending at the end of September, and have a lot of bonus content coming out about it in October. But this episode specifically, we will be interviewing Andy Geyerson, who is the director of the film festival, and he'll be talking about putting together a film festival. Maybe we can ask him a little bit about what it looks like doing one after COVID, and how it looks coming back, and how he sets up the movies. So we can get the inside scoop here on how a film festival happens.
Just like a film festival at Cannes. It's the same thing. Yes. It's the same thing.
Small town film festival, but this is the 15th year that it has run. Mm. So long time film festival. So
yeah, I think it's very timely because a lot of film festival talk has been happening recently. And maybe people are just interested in, you know, how does that even work? Like, how do they even get movies and get the rights? And we'll get all of that information. And hopefully it will get you excited for some of the bonus episodes we have about the festival itself coming in October. So it should be a fun episode. It's been a while since we've had, like, it's not like an interview, but it's kind of more like an interview than some of our other episodes. So it's something hopefully a little different that you guys will enjoy. That's all I have, though. I don't know if there's anything else to say.
No.
Zach, do you have anything else?
No.
All right. Well, thank you all for listening. And until next time, I'm Noah.
I'm Kayla.
I'm Zach Black.
You should have done Zach Attack. Oh,
there you go.
And we're Secondhand Film Critics.
I love it.